Welcome to Frontline Conversations and Systemic Response, COVID-19, a podcast hosted by Dr. Saliha Bava and Dr. Lori Charles. Join us for conversations on global mental health and psychosocial support. Hear valuable lessons learned from experts who are responding on the front lines of humanitarian emergencies.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Lori Lopez-Charles, and I am a family therapist based outside of Boston, Massachusetts. I am a systemic practitioner with a background in international relations. And right before we started thinking about the possibility of putting this podcast together, as a result of the pandemic known as COVID-19, where I am, I was on my way to Asia to do a project with 15 countries engaged effort through an office in the United Nations. So a lot of my work has been with international organizations. A lot of it has been in the Middle East and in Asia in humanitarian contexts and low resource settings, which now is something that's right at my front door, not needing to take a plane anywhere. So I'm so excited to have the opportunity to share a little bit about my experience with you here.
And your experience with Ebola, Lori.
Right, many years ago. Now it seems like it's front and center again. I worked in Conakry, Guinea for the WHO as a mental health officer, and I was deployed to Guinea to support healthcare members, healthcare practitioners, and to help the population deal with the stigma and the outcome of EVD, which now EVD reminds me, I mean, now we're talking about COVID, COVID, EVD, it's Ebola virus disease 2014. I had to explain a lot when I came back from Guinea to my counterparts in the US in a way that I don't have to explain anymore. So we did contact tracing, which we called surveillance in French, and it just everything translated into French, but basically the same process. And that's one of the reasons we thought it might be a good idea for us to share our experience. We have a lot in common.
We do, we overlap. Hi everyone, I'm Dr. Saliha Bava, and I am speaking from New York City. It's interesting because it's considered an epicenter, but there are so many epicenters all over the world. I'm originally from India, and my family of origin is in the other epicenters in India. So I feel this strange pull and push of being a citizen, being a mental health responder, and being somebody who activates during disasters and in emergency contexts. And for my day job, I teach at Mercy College. I'm a professor of marriage and family therapy, and I have a small private practice in the city, but I'm currently on sabbatical. And my focus of my sabbatical is emergence and how do we engage uncertainty. So here we are in an emergency context, and it's all around me. So thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
So Lori and I decided to pull our experiences together to talk from these different spaces that we occupy in our life, even as we are all impacted and responding, as a number of you are. I come from a marriage and family therapy systemic background, and my work, though clinical, has always been at the intersection of clinical and community. And I believe that mental health cannot be mental health if you don't think about it in a very psychosocial, community-oriented response, especially in these kinds of global emergencies. I traced my way back to India, where did a lot of refugee resettlement work and worked with in the developmental sector. Here, I moved here for my PhD, but I have been finding myself in different projects, in different spaces, in different places where there's some kind of an emergency context. One of those are responding to Hurricane Katrina, right from the early response phase to long-term recovery. So you'll hear us talk about these different projects and spaces that have, I think, informed our practices and thoughts in the way we will be reflecting on this current emergency context. And what does it mean to have a systemic response? What does it mean to be responding as a mental health professional? How can we think and unpack those and shape the response?
You're so humble, because leadership is also something I think about when I think about the work you did in Katrina. I remember watching you do that, and we can just let our audience know also that although I've known of your work, and I think we've known of each other's work for a while, we've graduated about the same time with our doctorates, but from different programs in different parts of the country. And we didn't really start working in a concerted way together, I think, until a couple of years ago. We prepared a chapter for the upcoming handbook, and we did a presentation that I think was a real opportunity for us to realize we had lots of lots of things that seemed to be relevant in different ways that we could contribute, and this is one of those things.
Right, and we have resonance in the ways we think, but we also have differences, and we feel comfortable bringing and talking about it, and we hope as U.S. listeners will respond, post your comments and how you think about our perspectives and how differently do you think. And it's about generating conversations that are creative and connecting. That's our aim here. This is going to be a local response, but a global effort. And so we need to be joining hands with each other. And I'm wondering, yes, how are you doing and what thoughts you're having about teams?
Well, I'm doing good, and I feel like I have my very tiny team of support that I always have, but now I'm much more aware of them. And then the folks that I'm talking to, clients, former trainees, some more recent, some less recent, and colleagues all over the globe, that's an issue on everyone's mind. Mm-hmm. How to support my team? And how do I, and by the way, they're also asking me, how am I going to get through this? Mm-hmm.
So how to receive the team support in some ways?
Yes, sort of asking for their others. And, you know, these are folks who are doing all kinds of health and public mental health and public health work. And not necessarily, though, of course, all my clients have a variety of different jobs, but basically, in some way, finding themselves in a type of role that's been reshaped because of the pandemic. And now having to think more concertedly or effortfully about teams, how to support their teams.
And the thought that comes to me when you say that is to also, we are so used to being responders, right? We get activated, we go to a location. But now that location is here and we are also impacted, right? Maybe to different degrees, but we're all swimming in that uncertainty. So when we think about teams, even in those settings when we were activated, we were not an outsider in an insider situation. But here, how do you even understand what is a team and your role in the team, even if you're a natural leader, meaning you're designated a leader?
Well, I mean, that's a lovely question, because it really forces me to think about what feels different about this, this situation. So, you know, in my work up to now, I'm almost always crossing a border in which I become a leader by virtue of the project, the mission. So I become on. I dress a certain way. I have a set of papers to show I'm here for this role. And then I deliver some product, a training, or a set of exercises. And that's much more fuzzy now because the pandemic crossed the borders. That's the nature of the pandemic. And I don't have to dress up. In fact, the opposite, because we're at home. Right. But I am also finding myself in the position of being asked by friends, by colleagues, by clients and trainees in, you know, 1, 2, 3 countries in the last 48 hours. Questions like you and I are discussing here on this podcast. So it just seems as if we're all asking similar kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm. The question I heard you say was how to support my team.
Yeah, that's a question from I actually got today from a team member. I consider myself having a virtual team right across the globe, people that I've trained or who are co-trainers with me in other projects. But I was asked that today. And so that's something that I think lots of folks are asking, since if they are a mental health professional or a public health professional, people asking them lots of questions about how do I stay well? Mm-hmm. So that's very simple, sort of, and all of a sudden they're the expert. Mm-hmm. In a way maybe they didn't expect, or the quantity has has increased of the questions. So maybe they're more visible because of some public platform where they've been able to talk about their work. And so more people are reaching out to them. So that's one piece. And the other piece is, if you're already doing that, probably you have some folks that you're supporting, training, and the question that you have about yourself, how am I able to do this? Mm-hmm. You also are wondering, how can my trainees, my supervisees, the people I'm supporting, who are under me, if it's an organization that works that way, how can I support them? They're having a really hard time.
I would expect them to be having a hard time, but not to be naive about it or somehow assume I know what's giving them the hardship. I'm curious, what are the challenges that makes it harder for them?
Well, lovely thing to be doing a podcast and discussion like this, because they're having a hard time is not my comment. That's the comment that the leader made to me about my people are having a hard time.
Okay, the people are having, okay.
Yeah, according to the person, I would say he's a leader, because we're all, everybody's like, all of a sudden, we're all leading. You know, and I'm starting to wonder, you know, that's like it's a really nice way to ask about how can I care for myself as well as my team. Mm-hmm. When I get that question, they're really having a hard time. I want to ask also, what are you seeing, like you said, that makes you think they're having a hard time? But also, how are you in this hard, it's a hard time. How can they not be having a hard time? It is a hard time.
And the other side of it is, when you say, hey, how are you doing? And I share what I'm sharing, how you frame it and go and talk to your partner or someone else, it becomes very important, right? If you say, oh, Salia's having a very hard time, I may have not said it that I'm having a hard time. I'm just sharing the hardship, but maybe I'm not speaking as in I need help and support. I'm just using that 2-3 minutes to kind of share and then move on. Yeah. So I'm curious about how do we hear when people are sharing their hardship?
Yes. And as in any other humanitarian emergency, what was there a hardship or hard time happening before? And so is that compounded in some way? And I think in this case, you know, because of lots of countries that I work in are countries that are low resource settings. So they have already had great stress perhaps on their health system. So that hardship is compounded by a pandemic. So it's uninvited everywhere, but folks who have low resources, I mean, if you think of that in terms of a hardship, now I'm just guessing, actually, I haven't asked yet the details, but I think that's a nice distinction, hard time versus hardship. So
hard times. Yeah. So that could be one thing as leaders, making that distinction and unpacking it together. Because just because we're leaders, we don't have to assume that if someone is having a hard time, they're not being supported if you don't do something about it. Maybe we're already doing something about it, and that's that listening and the sharing.
Yes, and you know, we had a little chat right before we started this podcast, and related to one of our other discussions that we plan to have around what to do, the impulse to want to do something. So I'm also hearing folks implicit in their observation about the team's hardship, new hardship, is what can I do?
Yeah.
Is there something I can do? And asking, you know, someone, anyone, asking me, asking you, asking each other, what can we do?
You know, and that's a beautiful question. For me, it's not just like, what can I do for you, Laurie, if you were my team member? It's more like, what can we do about this as a collective? Like, it's for me a brainstorming moment, a creative generative moment. And I'm curious, as leaders, do people feel like it's on them to figure the answer out, or do they create that context of, let's collectively think and define? Because what I can do is going to be limited by the resources, but it also means, how do I connect? How do I make the ask, right? Like one of the thoughts I've been having, what can I do as a citizen, and what can I do as a mental health professional? I keep asking those two questions of myself. Mm. And then what can I do as a family member? And how might I, when I'm thinking about doing something as a citizen, how does it affect my family and how do I prioritize?
I love listening. I love listening to your thinking and comparing, comparing what we're experiencing. So I think that's one thing is that to hold on to is the nature of the experience that we are all having is extraordinary. And the sharing of that extraordinariness is so, has such value, and it will come, it comes in all kinds of ways in my, you know, apps on my phone with a message or a video or chatting with you in this way. And also with a lot of people, hopefully in the way that you are sharing our experiences, there's such great value in that. And this comes, I think, from our systemic training, such and such, you know, such a foundation. So how, you know, I want to ask my, my person who asked this of me today, what is it that, you know, what is it that you're already doing? Cause I've noticed folks are really already doing lots of really interesting things to manage hardship, to deal with hardship, to support other people's experience of their hardship. And so I'm going there and discovering like so many cool things that people are doing.
That is a great question. What are you already doing? Like, I mean, this is a question. I just want to elevate this, that when we hear somebody speaking about a hardship, how are we listening? One of the ways to listen is to listen for what are they already doing. And if that's not obvious to us or they're not speaking to us, that question is to bring our attention to that. And that's systemic too, right?
It's systemic.
To notice both the absence and the presence of things and the interconnection, the relationship. So if somebody's saying, I'm really, really sleeping all the time, what are you already doing about it, right?
And when are you awake?
And when are you awake? What are those moments? Yeah.
It really is so systemic. And I think now I really have, I think it's like a bias or I'm not really sure what it is, but I feel more pressure, like a good pressure to that is addressed. That I make the extra effort because it's very easy to slip into the unknown and get lost.
Sorry to interrupt. When you said that is addressed, what's the that you're referring to?
The that being like, what are you doing right now that's working that or that's addressing this? So making sure that I have a good, robust understanding about, you know, everything from, you know, a client who all of a sudden has organized like their Wednesday night family Zoom. Actually, someone did tell me. So the family Zoom, I know everyone's Zooming all the time right now. We are Zooming. But to hear a client tell me about that experience, and then I want to understand how she organized it. You know, that's a large family meeting. I don't think I could do that with my family. It's so big.
Yeah.
And it just snowballs. The other clients doing different things, checking in with their team every day at the end of the workday, of course, by phone in a group chat. And it's a specific moment that this person has organized to do check in anything that you need to say can be said here. And she does it every day. So it's working for her. I think she's not sure. Is it working? Is this right? Is it okay? I don't know. And the question is, well, you know, what do you think? And how is it going? And what would you like to add to it? And also the timing, because as a lot of emergencies, they're acute at the same time that they're lengthy.
And the uncertainty of it all.
Yes. So like there's things that it's like some talking about stamina that you have to do what you can do today for yourself to manage hardship or help your folks manage hardship. But also keeping in mind what that might look like over the long run. So I sent this person a bunch of things around leadership and historical documents and papers and luckily she did not read any of them. She found something completely different that was way more brilliant. And I thought that's perfect. So these like nuggets of like, you know, value.
Well, I'm also thinking of the value of the conversation that you had with her that led you to send all these nuggets, but then she found something. Like something happens in the process where what you said, the nature of the experience we're having is extraordinary, and sharing that extraordinariness is of value. Yeah. And I think that to remember that moment, like, as you know, I work with leadership and I attend to that process a lot in emergency contexts. And for me, it goes back to that question of what are you already doing? It's trying to notice those things too, because those are our building blocks. And it's easy to feel you're not doing enough because there's such a call to do more.
Yes, a call to do more and a pressure to do more and a demand to do more from lots of folks that are in my circle. Those demands are, they are loud. I don't know, loud seems there. It's not an unwelcome demand, but it's relentless. Relentless is a word that's come up a lot. Mm-hmm. A pandemic is relentless. So of course the nature, it's isomorphic, right, to what people are experiencing. And so then I think again about like this self-care or taking a breath and taking care, not getting lost in the hardship.
Mm-hmm. And that's also okay.
Yeah.
The feeling of getting lost versus losing oneself in the process.
Sounds like something we talk about.
Well, to be lost is to acknowledge that what you're talking about, the parallel process, the isomorphicness, right? That we're all lost in some ways.
Yeah.
But to give ourselves permission is a different process, which is I can allow myself to feel at loss, right? And in that moment, we depend on each other. And that's why these conversations that leaders are having with you call it check-in or end of the day conversation, it's one other way to be in leadership, which is you are providing the space to check in, but it also helps you to understand what's also emerging.
I hear you, and I visualize the discussions that we've had around when, you know, you're creating something with other people in the interaction that you have with them. Mm-hmm. And so when my folks are having, you know, whether they're clients or former trainees or colleagues, doing the thing that they're doing to maintain some type of engagement, you know, in this moment with their team members, with the people that they're supporting, that they are finding new things. Mm-hmm. They are learning new things about each other and new ways of being with each other.
Right.
In their examples, I mean, I can't share them here. It's not that kind of podcast, but the creativity that you and I, of course, know, the creativity that comes from that process. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important to ask those questions, because then you get like so much information and there's no, I haven't hit a dead end yet with these questions. So I think, well, maybe that's something I can help folks who are asking me, what do I do now? What do I do? What do you suggest?
Well, I'm thinking an example, even though we can't talk about some things that are more confidential here right now, I'm thinking back to Katrina when I was volunteering at the George R. Brown and I was appointed as the leader of the disaster mental health response within the shelter, which was one of the largest shelters for people impacted by Hurricane Katrina and were being housed in this huge convention center.
The Superdome, right? Wasn't that the old Superdome?
That was the other one. Oh, this was the new one, yeah. There were two shelters. This was the first one to get up and running and ran for about 35 days before the next hurricane started to come. So it was pretty chaotic, pretty messy, and as any other emergency context goes, it was that rapid change. Every day something was changing. Oh, today we have this. Today we are not doing X, Y, Z that we said we will be doing yesterday, etc. What I remember to this point is, yeah, I was put in charge, but I didn't know how the whole thing was going to come together. I had no clue. We had a leadership model of like three other people along with me. So we had a leadership team, but I was the point person for disaster mental health in that floor. And then I could go to my team and check in how to go about instrumentalizing, operationalizing what needed to happen. So there was an internal chain of command that we set up. At the same time, with every shift, we had built in this notion of checking in. Because what was happening was the rich information that would come from people as they came and talked about what they experienced, what they observed, what needs they saw. And that helped us to design the next thing.
Nice.
Oh, we see people are just wondering. Maybe we should have more volunteers go and just check in with people who are wandering, who are looking lost. It was not something that we did it by design early on. It was something that came as a result of one of those check-ins. And then more of the quote-unquote mental health moved into what we call the floors. People were not sitting at the tables. People were walking around talking.
Well, so, you know, this is like inductive, right? It's the inductive process. And at a macro level, and it's absolutely where you need to go. I mean, even the research that, you know, that you and I are engaged in, folks are often talking about how important it is to make sure that any program you design mm-hmm. meets the needs of people on the ground. So that's exactly what you're talking about. I mean, and literally moving from a table to like to the people, mm-hmm. you know, is parallel to folks. You know, do we provide a mental health service in a hospital, or do we provide it like where people live? Mm-hmm. Which is usually not a hospital. Now, right now, that's very different because our hospitals are experiencing a very different moment. But this idea of like designing what you do. So if you have something that you're going to do, how is that something like relatable, directly relatable to the needs of the people that are on the ground that you propose to support, to help? And this is a question that informs so many therapies and our work, but also the type of like large scale, you know, humanitarian responses that you
right. And we're seeing it right now. I mean, yes. When we look at Italy and when we look at China and then we decide what our response is going to be, we localize it, but we're also learning from those who have gone ahead of us. I was on a call yesterday with California folks, and they're like, what do you think, because you New Yorkers are ahead, what do you think we need to be doing right now in preparation? Because our wave is coming, but if you're not there, you are.
So a good inductive question asking, a learning question.
Yes, a learning question. And that's a great way to think about as a leader, not only with your team members, but ask your team members, of course, the question of what else should we be doing? What are you noticing? But also have your team members ask that to the people they're serving, and to anybody else that they, because we're all as team members in relationship with other teams, mm-hmm. right? We are not like bounded by my role of mental health. I will be in conversation with my clients, in conversation with first responders, and I could be asking that, bringing that learning mindset.
Yes, and institutions, and I mean that's the nature of, I think, a global mental health. I mean, it has to be interdisciplinary and multi and transdisciplinary, but, you know, and can you build in that, or do you see, how do you introduce that lessons learned? You know, and I don't think it's too early, as you're even in your example, like looking back to what's already happened. When I responded to the Ebola virus disease outbreak, I think I was in the country. I was in Guinea about 2 weeks before we went to a conference in Liberia, which was called the Lessons Learned Conference. Mm-hmm. Now, I was only 2 weeks into my deployment, so that was in 2015. And that was a solid, I don't know, 9 to 12 months that Ebola had been, you know, being transmitted mm-hmm. across those countries in West Africa. So I have wondered, you know, a part of me, like, when is the good time for us to do that? Or is it a good time? Or what would be the things we discussed if we had that lessons learned conference tomorrow? And then what would we do in a month? Mm-hmm. These events are dynamic and fluid, and there are always learning that's happening. And then there's always questions that come from the learning that's happened. So,
and that's such a huge point you're making, Laurie, just to underscore it. The learning that'll happen right next to the event and the one that happens 6 months later, they're all learnings, but the perspective shifts because of time and more data and more learning that has happened.
Well, you know, maybe we'll generate some ideas for that lessons learned. Obviously, it would be a virtual conference. And so, I mean, I'm half joking, but as a point to the things that we are doing now are all, you know, virtual, and how so much of what we do in this like front lines, whatever it is that you're doing, and in systemic response, that you can translate what we have sometimes been stuck in thinking needed to be a physical proximity can be virtual, and it can be meaningful, and it is meaningful, and it's useful. And not only that, it's the only option in a lot of places, was the only option even before there was a pandemic. So I think the creativity that might come from that kind of a meeting, it's a dream, but you know, this is where my questions go, is like, what would we learn? And, you know, even like the way that I'm thinking about how I talk to my clients and colleagues and folks that I've worked with over many years, how they're managing and negotiating hardship right now is just so much learning. So what a moment to be doing this kind of work.
I think that's a great place to pause, Laurie, and maybe in our attempt to bring this to close, how about we name off some of the key points that stood out?
Yes, it's a lot of, you know, it's such a complex moment that we're living in. And I like that our discussions also reflect the complexity. But I think for us, there are some essential ideas that keep coming up as mm-hmm. important to repeat and to highlight. Mm-hmm. You know, that teams are relational. It's a relational process. Mm-hmm. That you're having the relationship, you know, and watching yourself and how you're dealing with hardship. And that's going to inform how you support other people that you might be in charge of, if that's your position, or people who look up to you to find out how you're dealing with the hardship, that matters, and to highlight it, to breathe into that moment and note it, comment on it. And if you're in a position to ask mm-hmm. someone else those kinds of questions, how valuable that is to do.
And to set up conditions for collective learning, mm-hmm. collective understanding. It's a very rich time. To be a leader is to be inclusive in hearing and listening for the perspectives that your team members bring, so that you hear the hardship, but you're also supporting them by noticing what is already being done or what is already being brought into life, so to speak. And this idea of allowing the complexity to hold you when you feel lost, and to own that sense of feeling of being lost, because that is also in support of the team. There is a very fine line on how to share it in a way that your team doesn't go, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? But it feels like a shared reality, a shared understanding.
We made this comment earlier, this isomorphic process that's so, in a way, there's such a beauty to it right now. We don't have to really struggle very hard to have to explain that, because we, of course, are going through the things that our clients are going through, our students are going through, our supervisees are going through. We're faced with this global threat in different ways, of course, but there's a commonality to it that is something that's shareable. And the way that we discuss it, and that is doing something, that is doing something important to appreciate that as a way to connect and learn more about what people are building in their relationships with each other.
Yeah, I love that. New ways of being with each other are emerging, and to notice that and appreciate it. That's great. Like you and me, we are doing something new.
Love it, Talia.
Okay, great. Thanks, Laurie.
Thank you. So we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. You can follow Dr. Laurie L. Charles on Mental Health Innovation Network and Dr. Saliha Bava on Twitter @ThinkPlay.